Welcome back to Ping. This is episode 218. That is 218 episodes of us bringing you the news that Microsofties are pinging each other about. Welcome back to Joey.
Hey!
Here with us this week on Rick's four-month gallivanting around the world.
I actually heard from Rick.
Have you?
Yeah, apparently somewhere he's lost somewhere in Canada because his Moose GPS system has malfunctioned.
Moose positioning system.
Yeah.
Does he need a bigger antenna?
I really don't
handler,
know.
Or however that works?
I'm not quite sure. I think he had to stand on top of the moose antlers just to get the one bar of signal to send me the email, which I promptly ignored because I was out of the office. So sorry, Rick. It wasn't my fault.
So the responsible beings are here in the studio to bring you some news this week. Let's look back at 217. We asked you, what would you like to track via a wearable device and develop KC's...
This response is awesome.
Great idea. Which he says, you know, don't go. I mean, he's going to patent this, so we can't do it. But I don't care. I just want this to exist. He says he wants to write an Outlook plugin that takes your heart rate and blood pressure readings from a wearable and overlays it on top of your calendar, so you can then like correlate the data compared to what meetings you're in, maybe who you're in the meeting with, and then you know, via some maths, you can probably determine who you don't want to be in meetings with it with.
I think we could take this idea a little further, right? You could actually display this up on the big boards that you have in a meeting, so like everybody in the room.
Everyone.
So the one guy that you're seeing across the way is just smiling and nodding, and you see his blood pressure through the roof. You get the reality.
He says that, like, giving an upcoming schedule, you could then send preemptive alerts to your primary care physician, letting them know you're probably going to have like a myocardial infarction soon. that's cool too. Have them all up there, almost like a lie detector.
Yeah.
Same thing. So like, you can use buzzwords into just to irritate people and see, like,
we should double click on that.
Oh, man. That'd be great. A couple other notes from our followers, our pingers. Gordon Beaming, yes, send in a postcard and you will get one. All the way from South Africa. That would be awesome. We have not gotten one from there yet. We didn't get one from Houston.
Yeah.
From Tekken itself.
Send it.
If you did, it's okay. John Egbert, sweet long-term fan, waiting to get a 9 guy to proudly display on your desk. Absolutely, we'll get you one out to you as well. Send in the postcards, and Golnaz will make it all happen.
Does she know this?
Yes, she watches the show, right? So now she knows.
I don't know. Does she actually watch the show?
Well, either way,
she's not been here in a month to shoot it.
Once the postcard starts rolling in, we'll just take a little pile in front of her and chain her to the chair until all those go out. We'll make sure. You are all loyal fans who send anything in, get a 9.
So you want to send it to this address right here?
It is Channel 9, Building 20, One Microsoft Way, Redmond, Washington, 98052?
Yes.
All right, good.
Yes.
Perfect. It'll be written there on the screen as well. Let's get on to the show. Coming from the space desk, NASA just tested out a new impossible reactor, or a new impossible engine, and it worked. Which, that headline right there confused me right off the bat.
it basically comes down to this. I have a theory on this, and we get to that later, but there's this new propulsion system that they use microwaves with, and so they were testing it, and they actually designed one of the tests to fail.
Yeah.
But it worked.
Right, like the idea being like you had an uneven container so that radiation like pressure, and gross oversimplification here if you're aware, would kind of build up unevenly in that like increased pressure on the one side would push the other side. And they're talking about the size of micronewtons. I think they said between 30 and 50 micronewtons, which is around the weight of a small smartphone.
Yeah.
So this is not a spaceship size.
No, no, but I mean they're looking at it as a way to shorten space travel, particularly
right.
to Mars.
Right. Well, the idea of this is doesn't include any kind of fuel, no liquid fuel or anything, which is so much of the weight. If you know, my fans who play Kerbal Space Program will know, you add all those solid boost rockers, it takes a long time to get actually boost up there. So this is a small scale, but they expected zero energy at all, and now they're confused. They're like, conservation of energy. What's going on here?
Yeah. How did this all work? Now, I have a theory that they came up with this concept because they were microwaving Hot Pockets.
Oh, yes.
Put the sleeve on wrong, propulsion.
Put the sleeve on wrong, that shiny side will just...
Exactly.
You need a new
microwave.
What
is microwave technology? Now, I'm sure the NASA guys are smarter than that, but I mean, this is super cool. And actually, there's been a couple of other folks that have actually developed this drive before, but I love the fact when science even confuses the scientists, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, we designed this test to fail. and it worked.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, that's science, right? You almost get excited. Yeah. A lot of things are almost created out of accidents. But this is the Kinade drive, and it says that it has the potential of cutting a trip to Mars from months to weeks. Again, like a lack of liquid fuel and all that sort of stuff. Really cool stuff. Hope to see more information from NASA in the future.
Surface Pro 3 news today. Actually this week, not today specifically.
Last week today, whenever this is aired, the magic of delaying things.
Sure, exactly. Surface Pro 3 is going to be hitting the United Kingdom, Australia, along with 23 other countries on the 28th of August, so folks can get one of these amazing devices.
I say, you have one right here.
I do have one in my hand.
I feel like everyone has one except me.
this is a loaner. I'm borrowing it. Only because we had this newest item on the show.
So right.
They're like, yeah, sure.
Well, how are you liking it so far?
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely love this device. So it's only been kind of available in the United States, Canada, and Japan so far. But at the end of the month, this puppy, which is the tablet that can be your laptop replacement. I watch the advertisements too,
of course.
And I have to back that up. Truly, yeah. As we were walking over here, we were talking about this a little bit, and I basically said, "Hey, Mark, this as soon as I get my own laptop's going on the shelf, it'll be used to run virtualization and everything else."
Primary machine, everything. Yeah, I mean, and all of them are available: the i3, the i5, and the i7, all coming on the same date. So, take your pick. Whether you're going to use this as kind of a lightweight, just run and do stuff, or a full workhorse, you can do the full stretch there.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, if you are in the U.S., Canada, and Japan, where the i5 versions were available last week, and I don't know if you covered that on the show last week.
No, not last week.
Last week, the i7 and the i3s became available, so you can get yours today. So pre-order now. Visit your Microsoft Store website.
For those of you running out of date browsers and maybe operating systems,
IE6.
And Windows XP, you are have a little lead time, but we're going to be changing the game a little bit. Starting January 12th, 2016, so again, lead time.
Plenty of notice.
Only the most recent version of Internet Explorer available will be supported, for a supported operating system, will receive technical support and security updates.
So for an example, Vista Service Pack 2, Internet Explorer 9 is the furthest back you can go to be fully supported with updates.
Right.
And then, of course, it changes, you know, Windows 7.
If you're on 7, you get i11.
i11, right. 8.1, i11. And then eventually, it's going to get to the point where there's a single supported browser. Very similar to what Chrome does today.
Right.
Basically, you only get full support in the latest version of the browser.
Right, yeah. Yeah, even though you may be a one or two behind, things will still work, but you're not going to get your security updates, like we said. And as a consumer, that's important. Enterprise, it's also very important. Keeping up to date with these things, I mean, I'm sure will make it a whole lot easier. Already there's kind of comes through the Windows updates, you get them, but we want to make sure that that's kind of seamless, and we'll have the up until 2016 to work that out. Everyone on the most latest up-to-date software makes everything so much easier.
Well, the other thing, too, is for those of you guys out there in the enterprise world who are looking at this and going, wow, I mean, yeah, it is 2016, but I've got some work. We've got some websites that don't support it. To have a look at enterprise mode, which is in IE11, right, which is you can turn it on, and it makes a lot of the bad websites that guys like Mark write look actually function.
Used to write back in 2006.
Right, at least.
That are still running.
But no, I mean, it does a pretty great job of
emulating,
you know, kind of
getting
over. Yeah, exactly. Some of the habits, right? Looking for a browser version, you may be running the latest. It's like, you need to upgrade your browser.
There's actually another update about ActiveX controls, kind of very similar, where we're going to be forcing people to kind of get the last up to date stuff. So we'll make sure that the most up to date stuff is running. There's a bunch of browser migration resources in this article as well. If you need help moving from one to another, if you want to see the change list, if you want to see the best practices for upgrading your things, making those internal exceptions for enterprise mode, and all sorts of things for that, including the chart that lists client and server OS and browsers that are supported.
Absolutely. And also, there's a ton of other resources out there. If you're a consumer, just turn on Windows Update.
Yeah, that's it.
You're good to go. Enterprises, take a look at this guidance. If you're a developer, take a look at this guidance as well. We've got consulting services that can get in and help. We've got a whole bunch of other options.
Send us a postcard.
Yeah, Mark will fix it.
Forza Horizon 2 is coming out this fall, and they've been doing weekly updates with a list of cars that will be available. Now, at launch, there will be more than 200 cars, so a lot of good favorites, some new ones, and here they are announcing a few of their favorites.
So, you can go and go a little old school with your 1990 Mercedes-Benz 190E.
Which is a solid car.
It is a solid car, particularly with the little fin on the back.
The little fin, the park bench on
the back. Yeah, it is a park bench. It is exactly right.
My personal favorite, a little extreme end, is the 2011 Bugatti Veyron Supersport, which is like 980 horsepower, 217 mile an hour top speed. No big deal.
Pretty sure my 1970 Datsun 510 could take that. You've got the whole variety here. This is the great thing about Forza.
Right. You can go through a pickup truck or the car you drive or some legends. So like the 92 Lancia, that has some racing heritage to it.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of these cars do.
But full spectrum or everything available. I'm assuming, and I have no inside knowledge, that there will be car packs available after that as well. So this is only going to be the intro 200 cars, which should keep you busy for quite some time, riding around in Southern Europe on the new tracks there. I'm excited for this game.
Yeah.
It's one of the Forzas that I've played all the Forzas, but I got really into the Horizon. So
on Xbox One, fantastic. So I think, September
30th? Do they have a date on
here? Yeah, it does. It's September 30th.
September 30th. There it is.
So get you some extra cars.
In what's being called a virtual body hack, researchers at Imperial College in London have developed a set including an Oculus Rift VR set, dual cameras, stereoscopic cameras, and muscle stimulators.
34 muscle sensors.
Ooh, it's a little creepy, but it lets you exist inside of another person's body, essentially. You put on your VR helmet, and you'll now be looking through the eyes of that camera on another person. And then every one of your movements is tracked via Kinect and translated into electrical stimuli, which would make the other person move. So you can look at them and you're seeing through them, and you can look down and you can move your arm and their arm's moving. So you see.
And you see their arm on you?
Moving, yes.
That's scary.
Well, you're seeing them. It's weird.
It's like one of those out of body experiences.
It's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
If that's going back a little ways.
Look, I get it. I got it.
But it's really weird.
Yeah, this is super weird. I mean, totally cool, great ways of leveraging cool science technology. Even if it is a little bit bizarre, I kind of sense a potential movie existing for.
You know, you can think of it maybe in medical reasons. They say gaming is obvious. I think gaming, it's still kind of creepy.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
It's interesting. Like, I want to know more about this. I don't want to put on any of those like electrodes on me yet. Someone else controlling my arm, contracting my muscles and stuff. But imagine like teaching someone how to do something or putting these on a kid.
Right.
Like you're a kid, not just a random kid.
Right.
It's like, brush your teeth here.
Well, and the really cool example that they give here is using an adapted version on mental health workers, so that they can simulate what somebody who has a mental illness is going through.
Right. Yes.
So super cool, super creepy,
but has a lot of potential. So interesting technology. I may not be ready to adapt this yet, but some of you may, and let us know how it works out.
Yeah.
Digital Ethereal is a project that is exploring bringing physical and wireless things into kind of the same realm. And this little project lets you show the strength of a Wi-Fi space on your phone. And as you move it around, you can take long exposure photography and kind of see a full field of what Wi-Fi strength is around you.
So as you're moving the phone, it's representing itself as a color.
Correct. Yeah. So it looked in the photo, it shows kind of like a blue and green, which I'm assuming are the higher availabilities of Wi-Fi, and red where it's lower. Apparently, Wi-Fi is like heat. It rises up to the top of the building. Who knew? But it is a project among a couple other projects they do around this kind of space. It's kind of neat. Thought we'd share it with you.
Absolutely. Hey, you remember the web 20 years ago, Mark?
Yes, actually.
No, you're.
I did. I had a GeoCities site.
Yes,
I did.
So if you want to visit what the Microsoft corporate website looked like back in 1994, you've got to check this out.
Yeah.
I was very amused with this because growing up with this, and you know, I'm not the youngest cat here ever, but going through some of this stuff, just taking a look at the links. Mm-hmm. One of the big, first of all, the page, it looks like it was designed in 1994, cool, because it is. But one of the first things, ftp.microsoft.com.
There's a gopher. There's a gopher link.
There is a gopher link.
And I clicked on it.
You
and
did?
I did. And it popped up in the Windows Store and said, would you like to download an application that supports this protocol? There are none in there yet.
Yet?
I may have a weekend, you know, project on my hands now. I don't know if it's out there, if anyone's serving Gopher stuff, even if that link would even work if I had a client, but...
That's really kind of crazy. I mean, Gopher, I mean, used Gopher...
I don't know I used Gopher all that much. I used Usenet, you know, all that fun stuff. I telnet it a lot into, like, Muses and Mushers and Muds. Ran a BBS.
Yeah.
For a little bit, played some Legend of the Red Dragon.
So fire up that 300 baud modem and connect on up and check out 20 years ago... the Microsoft.com corporate website.
Yeah, actually, if you go into the view of the source, which is the first thing I did, of course, there's also a little comment that gives an Easter egg, not Easter egg, but there's a README file that shows you, talks a little bit more about how they did this stuff. So
was this cutting edge?
So for a little inside of it. So interestingly enough, they actually recreated this, right? So they're like, oh, it's probably just tables. That's where everything was back then.
Yeah, yeah.
So look back, tables was actually invented 3 years after this. So they're like,
wow.
Oh, maybe it was an image map. No, image maps weren't into the RFC until a year after, until 95 as well. So they went and actually made like a server-side CGI where like, and this is an old trick, when you click on an image, it would send the X and Y coordinates back to the server.
Okay, right, yeah.
And then you had like, if inside this rectangle, send to this
page. Then return this.
And that's actually how they did this.
The old website was running on Windows NT 3.5, which was actually the second server operating system I ever ran. Oh. We won't talk about the first. MWAX HTTPS.
Before we had our own, apparently.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's crazy with it. When the first link top and center is like, send us your feedback, followed around by news and... Yeah. You know, go to TechNet and some of that.
And
stuff.
Most of them are all updated. So like the developer network on ramp is MSDN.
Right.
And like what's new is the news blog and all that stuff. So it still works. If you weren't around the web back then, you may not appreciate this as much as those of us who were. But it's a neat little nod to nostalgia. Thanks for watching episode 218 of Ping. 218 is now in the can. Remember to follow us all the time on Twitter.
Hashtag
Ping Show. Follow us individually at Mark DeFalco.
I am at Joey Snow.
Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/ThePingShow. Comment down below and we'll give you a prompt. And that is our question of the week.
Yes.
We took a look back this week at something 20 years old, the 1994 Microsoft website. What piece of nostalgia are you missing from back then? I mentioned BBSs before. I miss playing Legend of the Red Dragon.
Yeah. Gopher, Sock, some of those protocols. I'm still using Usenet on occasion.
Oh, I do use Usenet.
Yeah, absolutely.
True. So
there's still some stuff that exists. Dragon's Lair, though it just came out.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
There's more that's coming out?
Oh, Dragon's Lair is out.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
oh, yeah.
What are you missing? We got plenty that we're going to go play with after this. Well, let us know, and we will see you next week.
Looks like he hit the tree, Jim.